Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today is a special episode of the Late Night Podcast, in which Seth Meyers has an exclusive long-form interview with the legendary talk show host Dick Cavett. You'll hear them discuss Cavett's career and why his unique style has stood the test of time. Without further ado, here are Seth Meyers and Dick Cavett.
Hey, everyone. This is very exciting. Today's guest on the podcast is the legend Dick Cavett.
I couldn't wait to hear who it was going to be.
Oh, well, it was you this whole time.
Gosh, what is a legend anyway?
Well, I think one thing is you got to last a long time, so congratulations on that.
Yeah, the fact that you've held on through thick, if not thin.
Exactly, mm-hmm. And you certainly have. You are one of my favorite talk show hosts of all time, and I'm very excited to hear that you're about to get into the podcast game as well.
It appears so, yeah. I didn't want to be the only one not having a podcast in the world, so... Do you enjoy it?
I do enjoy it. Well, I remember when we first met, mm-hmm. I said that one of the things I was jealous of is back when you did your show, you had very long interviews. And you're going to be on the show tonight, and we will probably have somewhere between 7 or 8 minutes to talk, which seems like a very short amount of time.
The Peloponnesian War was shorter than that.
Yes. So podcasts allow a longer conversation, which I always felt was one of your strengths. So that seems like a perfect fit.
I always found it was easier to do 90 minutes with a guest, a good guest, that helps, of course.
Right.
Time to pass. Than to do 7 minutes with them.
Yeah.
Because in the first answer, you think, there's three things I'm not going to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And some guests you should find when you start doing 90-minute shows called Dick Cavett-type shows, you will find that people get better.
Yes.
In fact, often after the initial, when you do have a 7-minuter, they just start to relax and stop using the word excited every 2 minutes.
Well, I do want to talk about the fact that your show endures because you interviewed a lot of people that now... It's really interesting to go back and see them on a talk show. People like Marlon Brando or John Lennon or George Harrison. And you realize, they're not by nature great talk show guests. And mm-hmm. It is only through the time they spend with you that they get better.
Harrison got better. I remember somebody saying, you're going to try to do 90 minutes with George. But he got better about the point where I pointed out that he was sitting in a chair that Yoko Ono had sat in the week before.
Uh-huh.
And he had the wit to jump out and brush himself off.
A lot of times, they looked as though they didn't want to be there in the beginning. How did you, mm-hmm. like, talk about getting John and Yoko to come on the show? Because obviously, they're not the kind of people who need to promote themselves on a talk show.
No, to get their names out there.
Right.
They could be famous. I don't know in that case. I rather early on, I said, I don't want to book the show anymore. I can always think of a reason not to have a certain guest. And sometimes it's, they're so great that I might blow it. If I'll get through one good show, leave it at that.
Sure.
It never happened. They did come back and they were good again, but I never was sure I would be. But when you're suddenly in charge of 90 minutes of live virtually television, and you've never done it before. I was lucky, I felt, to get a laugh on my first 90-minute show, even though I was rigid and had four guests.
Who was you? Did you get your first laugh when a guest was out? Or
no, it was this. I was standing there rigid, coming back from commercial, looking at the prompter, and realizing, oh my God, I forgot we have an ant expert on the show. And they cued me, and instead of saying, I'd like you to meet Elmer Bursby, and I said, no show is complete without an ant expert. And it got a laugh from the crew and then some people. And I thought, maybe I'm going to be able to do this.
Have you found in recent years that, because I remember when you and I met, I had so many questions about interviews that I had seen on YouTube. Oh, yeah. Is that something that's happening to you a lot now, that people are asking you about the show because they found it on the internet?
It is, because what's it called? A digital decades.
Decades. Right, decades.
I believe owned by CBS.
Yeah.
Quite possibly. And yeah. And people in some areas get it all the time. Others don't know it's on and don't get it. And some see it and don't get it, of course. But in California, for example, everybody, it seemed, has seen last night's Decades show. And it's strange when they say, you had one of my favorite people on, and they name them, and I don't remember them.
Isn't that something?
But part of doing this is not remembering. Not to get into a deep philosophical discussion, but did I tell you in our last meeting... And I'm glad it wasn't that, rest in peace. Why does every comic have to say my family, rest in peace? Anyway, it would be a case of noticing suddenly that the guest's lips had not moved in a while.
Yeah.
And is that the sentence I started? And you sort of freeze at that moment, wonder what on earth they might have been talking about, because over your shoulder, the guy's holding up a cue card that's illegible, and then somebody has another one, but they just take it down just before you turn to it. Somebody's trying to make a signal with gestures and symbols that you do not know, and then you turn to the guest. I think I told you that I partly solved that by having something that applies to anybody in the world.
A question you can
ask.
Yeah,
something.
What was that?
How many states are there? Do you pee in the shower?
Gotcha.
Turned out to be the best one.
Those are the good
fail states.
The
late Avril Harriman didn't like it, but some people did.
My least favorite question, only because I don't feel comfortable answering it, is people will ask, who was your worst guest?
Oh, yeah.
Do you, what was your answer to that when people
ask
that?
Well, I'm not going to be the sort of chicken dribble that doesn't answer questions that you pose to me.
Thank you very much.
Especially
right after I admitted that I dodged the question. You're going to be a man and answer it.
Now cut that out. It was the Vice President of the United States at that point, name of Spiro Agnew.
Right.
And they had told me, he was just early on, before he was caught as a crook, he was crooking in the Nixon administration, and ideal for him then. I don't know what did it, but they said, oh, we're going to bring you about 7 cartoons of Agnew, because now all the cartoonists were caricaturing him, Herb Bloch, everybody, and he'll have amusing things to say about them.
This was the idea for when he was on the show, to show him political cartoons. Got it. All
and
right.
Political cartoons of your guest. Bet you wish you'd thought of that. I said on the first one, now, the Herb Bloch draws your eyes kind of like it's almost a horizontal line and nothing else. And he said yes. He agreed.
Okay.
I got a slightly longer answer on the next one, and it just was a disaster. He was an uninteresting clod.
What? Now, what?
May he rest in peace, by the way.
Yeah, may he rest in peace. Good. I'm glad you mentioned it.
Seth, talking about frustrations, the thing you think of later. I have this anagram curse where I rearrange the letters and say, just as Spiro Agnew, 11 letters, it's 10, left, and I could see the taillights of his limo leaving, I thought, Spiro Agnew, grow a penis.
Wow. That was right there for you, and you missed it.
You want to try check it out?
I'm going to do it right now. Can I ask what was, why would Spiro Agnew come on the show? What was he hoping
accomplish? They were trying to trot him out and introduce him to the public.
This was early on.
He was quite new.
I can confirm now on my notepad here that Spiro Agnew is an anagram for grow a penis.
Oh, that's right. I told Gore Vidal, and he said, you could also use grow a spine, but yours is better.
What, Marlon Brando, how do you convince Marlon Brando to come on the show?
I'm sorry. What just went through my head was normal and broad, Marlon Brando.
Normal and broad. Normal, wow, you are very, and, really.
And I never told him. I should have. He'd have loved that.
I don't think he would have liked being called normal.
Well, he was not excessively broad at the time, though he was at other times.
Well, you could use the B and the A from broad to be abnormal, but then you're left with, what do you got?
You're moving in on my territory. Yes. It's the only unique thing I have. My masterpiece, some say, was stolen. I drove past a movie theater out on the island at night, and they come late, more at night when you're starting to get sleepy. And it said on the marquee, Lawrence of Arabia, starring Alec Guinness. And I had just had Peter O'Toole on, and I thought, this will be funny. I'll photograph that so he'll know who the star of Lawrence of Arabia
really is. Famously Alec Guinness,
And then my little voice said, prices, genuine class.
Yeah.
And that is Alec Guinness.
That is Alec Guinness. And when you say it's stolen, do you mean that it was stolen by The Simpsons? Because that's where I first heard that.
Oh, those bastards.
They took everything. It was on The Simpsons. An early Simpsons episode.
Well, I gave birth to it in East Hampton at 2 a.m. on August. Oh, never mind.
I wouldn't be surprised that the erudite Simpson writers would be aware of your skill and would steal from it.
Yeah, well, you'd be right. I didn't sue the crossword puzzle that used it.
Oh, well, they don't have any money. What are you going to get from the crossword people?
Yeah, a few crosswords.
Yeah, exactly. A few crosswords.
Hey, we're hot.
Wow, my God, the wordplay right now is sizzling.
Funny stuff.
So back to our friend Normal and Broad, Marlon Brando.
Yeah.
So again, not a famous, you don't think of him as being a famous talk show guest. He's not someone where you see clips of him on many shows. So yet he comes on your show.
He did it a couple of times, or he would cancel.
Oh, that tracks with what I know about Marlon Brando.
Well, I was afraid of that happening, and then one day the phone rang. Who's Marlon Brando? I thought, don't let it be an impersonator. Don't let it be... everybody did Brando. It was Marlon, and we spoke for, well, the sun was still up when the conversation started. He's loquacious as hell.
Yeah.
And the moon was rising when it was over.
Now, when you have a phone call like that, are you worried this might be a very hard person to have on a talk show because of his inability to sort of round off a story?
Yeah. I thought, I'll just put him out there and exit. that would have been a good show, too. Only thing I thought I said funny on that show was when I hit him with, knowing what it might get, did you expect The Godfather to be such a fabulous success? I don't want to talk about movies. And I said, and the audience laughed, and I said, what about the book, The Godfather, did you like? That got a big, and he laughed. And my director fell in love with Brando's grin. He said, I just couldn't cut away from it, that million-dollar grin when Brando shows his teeth.
Well, he feels so mysterious now. He must have been equally mysterious then. Were you intimidated to sit down with him? Were there guests that were intimidating to you?
Some, yeah. For some reason, I was worried about Alfred Hitchcock.
That makes sense.
And we had a delightful time. I don't know why. I lost being nervous about the show, fortunately, about 1 year in or less. But I don't know why I worried about Hitchcock, and he was just fine, and it was just funny, and they had a silhouette of him and me at the beginning with our, his stomach and my body. And right in the middle of the show, we had a commercial break, so we're sitting there staring into the distance, trying to chat, there's too much music playing. And suddenly he looked away from me and looked off into the middle distance and said,
Grace Kelly, the most promiscuous woman I've ever known.
To, may she rest in peace. But isn't that strange?
Yeah.
And no one told me. And boy, was she something. And Jimmy Stewart had a big thing with her. And
he probably thought it was a big deal. And then he found out how promiscuous she was and thought, oh, well.
I know. Yeah. Gosh, I didn't know what to do with the news. You know?
It is a strange piece of news.
I met her backstage at the Schubert Theater in New Haven. She was attending a show that was there. Up from the audience, backstage, say hello to somebody. And I, bang, there she is, as you are, right in front of me. And as one known for coming up with witty and elaborately intelligent things, I said, congratulations on your award.
Wow, flop. That's really not
I'm sure
great.
She hadn't heard that before. She had just won the Oscar, quite yeah. obviously. And she said, thank you. And I just, whenever I hear those two words, it's grace.
You, another person, I you know, sort of intimidating both in stature as writers. Norman Mailer also strikes me as someone physically intimidating.
And he could be when he was in his pugnacious
yeah.
mood. You might be thinking of the Mailer, the notorious.
That's
Mailer
what I wanted
Bidell
to ask
show,
about. Yeah,
where he came on from the wings. Gore had done a long, wonderful segment, and Janet Flanner from the New Yorker. I don't know what it's like. And then I introduced the Norm, and he came on with his fists at shoulder level, walking his pugnacious walk. Uh-huh. I think he called it, and I knew we were in some kind of trouble. He was there to gut Gore for a piece Gore had written in the New York Review of Books about him. And had fashioned a notion of brutality and violence and murder in men, and called it the sort of the start. He said, starting with Henry Miller, then we have Miller, Mailer, Manson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
3M, he called it. And there was a quote from one of the pieces that Norman had written, a novel, actually. And he said, well, what's so bad about what things I write? And I said, well, you find it amusing to have a man bugger his wife and then throw her out the sixth-story window. Uh-huh. Norman then decided that was not to be criticized. He didn't know how he could infuriate me in one particular way that people who know me. He compared me to or with David Frost. It went like this. I asked him something. Why don't you just look down at your question sheet there and read another question off of your question sheet. And I looked at the paper and I said, why don't you fold it five ways and put it where the moon don't shine? This is often misquoted as stick it, but you'll agree that would be vulgar.
Of course, yeah, you don't stick it.
I don't know where I got that. I don't know if it's Nebraska tribal memory of some sort. It comes back to me all the time. And the other thing that still does is, I'll never forget the look on your face when that guy died on the show.
Yeah.
And for a moment, I have to think, what's he talking? Oh, yeah. Would you think of all the Guinness Book of Record type things in various languages, I might be the only one who's had a guest drop dead?
Yeah, you had, this is a true story. You had a guest. Yeah.
A couple actors in live television dramas did, and one they dragged into the control room because it was live and had to go on with the show.
But you, this was, there was a great irony to what kind of guest he was that dropped dead.
Well, who would the gods think of, knowing them as we do, that would be perfect to drop dead on a talk show, but a health expert.
It was a health expert.
Rodale was the magic name. Rodale Publications, a prevention magazine, a whole... He was a huge health man.
Was it during his interview? How far had he come out yet?
He had come out and done a 30-minute segment with me.
Okay.
And he was quite funny, and I made a, pardon this, mental note to have him back.
Okay.
That was the beginning of several ironies that were going to now take place. But the staff, really, we didn't want to look at it afterwards. The way it came about was... One shot on Pete Hamill, columnist, New York. And he suddenly changes his expression and looks sort of to his right, but doesn't want to look all the way to his right because Rodale was sitting there. And I heard, and Hamill says, not knowing he's in, this looks bad. And Rodale was clearly joining the silent majority.
Wow. And so what happened? There's an audience?
Yeah. Full audience. And laughter.
Sure.
Because it's an entertainment show and people are in makeup and there's a band playing and you all came there to have fun.
And I think when you see someone, you think this was probably some part of a bit. This is...
Absolutely. Anything that takes place on a stage, and there have been other tragedies, but not necessarily deaths or losing an arm in a guillotine scene or something.
Right.
It's got to be part of the show because they wouldn't invite people in. And,
they wouldn't let somebody die on a television show.
Some would maybe, but I won't mention any names. But strangely, it moved like a wave from the front, people in the front toward the back. And there were two lovely stewardesses in the front row, flight, whatever we say now that PC is upon us. And they were crying. And the people around them were not, but they knew from experience what had just happened.
Oh, wow.
And that...
interesting.
How would jazz musicians put it? They had bought the agricultural acreage.
Unbelievable. So,
did they say bought the farm when you were a kid?
I'd heard it, but I was around hardly anyone who dropped dead, so I didn't hear any of the expressions.
Well, you knew where to go and stay out of trouble. But and as it moved backwards, you could still see people who said, they wouldn't be doing, as you just said, they wouldn't be doing. But finally, everybody got it. And there's a rumor that I said, because of the, are we boring you, Mr. Rodale? And I looked at the tape, and I wasn't looking for that. I looked at the show only a few years ago in my friend Marshall Brickman's apartment, and we both had a wonderful time for the first hour. I have a really good one-hour show that's never been seen. And then it's no fun after that.
Yeah.
It's awful.
So it's likely that the last words he heard were you saying, are we boring you?
This, oh my God, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Thanks for laying guilt on me.
Well, I think, you know.
He should have said, no jokes, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. No. You had a line?
No, my only thing I was saying is, you know, as someone with my own show, the dream is to die on camera. I mean, that's the dream.
Lord. It was so sad, man. And the fact that he looked like Trotsky. It was an interesting lookalike.
Yeah.
A little weird. And extremely personable and...
Well, I think the most impressive thing about any of this is that you kept getting guests after that.
Yeah. We had to handcuff them and bring them in, but we did. The strangest part is, I wrote a piece about it that I just Googled on the New York Times at the time, the title of which was, The Guy Who Died on My Show, I think, coming from a longer sentence, which was, the people who until at least a month ago said, God, Cabot, I've never, John and Yoko, but I'll never forget that night and the look on your face when that guy died. And I have a choice. And I usually say, well, were you there? No. Well, how could you see the look on his face? I saw the show. Nobody saw the show. Many people think they did. Now, of course, it was in all the papers. It was on the late news that night because we taped early enough for that. And I talked about it apparently vividly the next night, of course, because what else do you do? I called Johnny and I said, how do I do the rest of the show? Johnny Carson from Nebraska. And he said, Richard, you just talk about it. Get that out of the way. And you'll be amazed how you can go back to the show after that. Go to commercial, and now here's Phyllis Diller or whatever. You know. 'Tis true.
Well, it's nice how muscle memory takes over at times like that.
Seth, you think if I had then maybe approached the Rodale family, who were very interested in health and medicine, as we know, saying, I'd let you see this. I don't think they ever asked to. And maybe we could do a bit of a service by showing that and then saying, how many of us really know what to do when somebody drops to the floor in front of yours, over in the chair, whatever. Have a couple of doctors and emergency types sitting there saying, well, not to be critical, but you should have first gotten him extremely parallel to the ground. And an intern came up, and two actually, from a, and one was pounding his chest, and the other had, it was doing a lower stomach, it seemed like. And I just thought, this isn't what I went into show business for. No.
Well, exactly. There's another show business thing, which is if the interns are doing something important, the wheels have come off.
Yeah. Did I tell you that I said about, is there a doctor?
No.
The next thing I remember from taking his wrist and not having any idea what a wrist was supposed to feel like and knowing I knew nothing about it and hating the fact that I was the man in charge.
Sure.
Somebody had to do something, and unfortunately it was I. And the next thing, in a kind of dream transition, I find myself standing at the edge of the stage saying, is there a doctor in the... And it sort of faded out. And these two guys were coming up anyway from over there. I hadn't seen them. When I met Miss Katharine Hepburn, the famous actress.
Yes.
When she agreed to do the show, I went over to her house at 244 East 46th. And she sat on the floor and she said, I want to know everything about the man who died on your show. And she did medicine and acted. People who were in movies with her got all kinds of pills and things from her. Her dad was a doctor, and she loved medicine. And I said, why do you think I froze on, is there a doctor in the... And she said, accurately, well, because you knew as a doctor in the house would get a laugh. Is there a doctor in the house is used in comedy sketches? Savers. And she's right. I wonder if it would have under those circumstances, but they... Not everybody knew how serious it was exactly at the kind of spooky thing, too. I reached into my pocket backstage, and I had some certs, and a, not a lighter, but a couple of other objects and a little paring knife type thing or something, of his, obviously. I don't know how I got them. I don't remember getting them. I don't remember putting them in my pocket. So I think your consciousness kind of goes in and out at moments like that.
I can only imagine.
They were his things. Boy.
That's a little suspicious.
I'm afraid to do an anagram of Rodale.
Yeah, I would like to. Yeah. thank you so much for sharing these stories. We are going to see each other tonight.
Oh, I'm just getting started.
Oh, well, I'm going to save some of it for this evening.
I always wanted somebody to do that to me. Say tough.
All right, I'll see you this evening. It's always such a pleasure to see you.
Oh, this evening?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
We're going to see you on the show.
I forgot where we're going, the ballet?
Yeah, we're going to go to the ballet.
Okay, yeah. People will think we're sissies.
Thanks, Dick.
Okay.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.